In mid-April of the 276 schoolgirls, 219 of which remain in captivity, has become a symbol of the government's powerlessness to protect civilians from attack. Defense spokesman Major General Chris Okolade said in a statement that the arrested man used his membership of a pro-government vigilant group as a cover while remaining an active terrorist. The general also said the man had coordinated several deadly attacks on Megari since 2011, including on customs and military locations. So violence has been relentless in northeast Nigeria, in particular, with 100 killed in the past several months. So on Sunday, the Jibba community was attacked again in places. So militants opened fire on churches, homes, and killing. So there has been one arrest. And a couple of women was also involved in that.
You know, Madam President, there has been a lot of work done by the Nigerian government. But unfortunately, it's not enough. It's not enough. There have been a lot of work by the government. There have been a lot of arrests. And they just concluded an investigation into the whole process. The government just completed it. But the report hasn't been open yet to the public. Mm. So it's not like the government is just sitting down, not doing nothing. Mm-hmm. They're doing something. But because of the political sensitivity of the whole thing, they're being very careful.
So President Obama, you and I were talking earlier, and you were telling me about a celebration coming up, an Independence Day celebration. You want to remind our listeners about what's taking place?
Yes, thank you, Tina. This has been going on for years since the establishment of the Nigerian community in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Every year, we do our independence celebration. Nigeria received their independence from Britain in 1960. So every year, like you guys just did yours on July 4th. Mm-hmm. So we do ours on October 4th. But because we are far away here, we try to do it the closest Saturday of that October 4th. And this year happens to be on the October 4th. And I think a gift for our community here, what will really make me happy is that By this celebration on October 4th, all the girls will be free and brought back to their homes. Mm-hmm. If that happens, we will be celebrating our independence and celebrating the freedom of the girls. So let's please keep our hands crossed, keep on praying, keep on keeping hope alive. We need this to be done. It's taking too long. We want our girls back.
Well, I want to thank you once again for being our guest. And again, for helping us keep hope alive for the lives of the abducted children.
Thank you.
Deborah, you want to close this out?
Yes, Deborah Hall here. I'm again with a couple quick announcements. Mm-hmm. First is a press release that was issued by the American Federation of Teachers. Secretary Treasurer Loretta Johnson has been elected as a trustee of the National Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Johnson was elected during the coalition's 43rd International Convention held in Atlanta in June. As a trustee, she will work to increase the vitality of CBTU and assist in recruiting and training the next wave of leadership. Also happening on this coming Saturday, July 12th, join National AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Liz Shuler, along with the Labor Education Research Center and dozens of unions and constituency groups, as the Oregon AFL-CIO hosts a constituency group gathering from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. Lunch will be provided. That will take place at the Oregon Labor Center. The address is 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. The website address for you to RSVP is bit.ly/activate2014. And we hope to see you there, all of the constituency groups of AFL-CIO. Thank you.
Yeah. Again, here, Vitalis Obama, the president of Nigerian community in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Let's also know that there are a lot of progress being made. Last week, it was reported that 60 girls out of these 300 girls that were have been held hostage escaped, and they are safely back to their families now. So that's a little step, but that's something to also remember, put out there. It's a good news.
Okay. And I just quickly want to make a last announcement that the NAACP will be holding their general membership and an executive board meeting on July the 12th at the Red Cross at 12 noon. The first hour will be our general membership, and from 12 to 1 and from 1 to 2 will be our executive board meeting of the Portland NAACP.
So once again, brothers and sisters, I want to thank you for joining us for the July segment of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. We meet every second Tuesday of the month. However, we will not meet tomorrow. Our next meeting will be on August 12th. It will be held at the American Federation State County Municipal Employees William Lucy Building, located at 6025 East Burnside, and that's in Portland. Our email address is orcbtu10@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd like for you to grab a hold of your passion, because trust me, Portland's got a lot of it. So again, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Signing off. Holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio proudly co-sponsors the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on Thursday, July 17th from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison. This fundraiser opens with an ocean art show and silent auction, followed by a screening of the surf film Seven Signs. Then the reggaetronic five-piece band Everyday Prophets takes center stage at 10 p.m. Again, that's the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on July 17th. More information may be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight I'm speaking with Anne Marie O'Malley, who works at the Independent Publishing Resource Center in Southeast Portland, which empowers people to self-publish. Since 2012, Anne Marie has been teaching creative writing at Columbia River Correctional Institution, a minimum security facility in Northeast Portland. Anne Marie has produced 6 books of writing from her students and is launching a Kickstarter campaign to fund the expansion of the program. She joins me today with her former students, Akias King, Nathan McNair, and Michael Dillon.
What we do is we meet for between 8 and 10 weeks, and it's 12 students. We workshop each other's writing, so we start off with the foundation of what that means, what it means to give critical feedback. And then I pair that with lots of writing exercises that I've written and put together that I usually are gearing them towards writing about themselves, but really it's open to writing about anything. And then we talk in each class. We do a free write. We talk about readings that they've been given, and then we workshop 2 to 3 people's writing. And then at the end of the class, each of the students submits up to 3 pieces to be anthologized, and we make a book for them, and then they get 5 copies of that book to do whatever they want with. We run the class concurrently, so it's just I end one class and the next week I start a new class and let a new crop of students come in. And then I try to reserve space for students who want to return.
People think writing is about spelling or about good handwriting, but it's not. It's about expressing yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's about creativity.
Mm-hmm. The order that she gives the writing prompts or the assignments, it leads you to get more and more daring and put more of yourself down there on the paper. Generally, at least the course that I took, it started with a letter to your younger self. Mm-hmm. And because everybody knows something about their younger self or some kind of advice you'd like to give to your younger self, it's a relatively easy assignment.
Right.
And until you really start writing it, it's really profound in a lot of ways to be writing to your younger self from in prison. Mm-hmm. Because generally what you'd like to do is give your younger self the type of advice not to end up in prison. That's the, you know,
that's what you're going to want to do.
And most of us, that's what we did do. But there's that thing that happens, and I think Mike experienced this, that when you start changing things in life, it changes everything else. I guess it's a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it really makes you start thinking.
Yeah, if you don't make some of the mistakes you make, then you don't have some of the good things you currently have. So,
exactly.
So it's a tough choice. That's where I went with it when I wrote my letter to self.
Yeah, that exercise is really interesting because of the varied results that we've gotten from it. And I really like giving that prompt because I think it's a great opportunity to reflect on the good and the bad and the things that one would wish that they had done differently, but also on, hey, you know, this is really a beautiful thing that happened in my life, and this is why I'm have grown into this the man I am or person I am today. There's a prompt that we do, the I Remember prompt, and it's actually based on a writer named Joe Brainerd, and he did a long sequence poem where each line starts with I remember. And what I encourage the students to do is to also include what they don't remember. But that has turned into one of the most fruitful writing prompts because it's so open-ended, but it also gives them a form to stay within. So I think, I know, Nathan, that you were interested in reading an I Remember piece. Is that true?
Right. Yeah, that's right. This is Remembering Oregon State Penitentiary. I remember the crashing metal sound of a steel door closing and how it made me, and how it filled me with dread and anxiety. I remember my first week in prison and how those bells kept ringing and the cell door kept popping open. I remember looking down the long tier of cells and thinking, those are someone's sons, brothers, fathers, uncles, and childhood friends. I remember how those long, desolate, empty tiers could be transformed into a chaotic mass of angry men with the sound of a bell. I remember not wanting to be in prison, yet realizing that I had too many years to bring to be thinking that way. I remember stuffing all my feelings down, both joy and pain, while telling myself to shut up and do my time. I remember the cracking sound of fists on flesh and the loud crashing noises of two men in a cell next door in an all-out brawl. I remember keys jingling and groups and large groups of officers running into the chow hall. I remember the sour smells in the state prison's chow hall and how it's segregated by race and paperwork. I remember when Dollar Bill shanked Clayton Howard in the chow hall with a wooden shiv. I remember breaking off a metal rung from a food cart and sharpening it on a concrete floor. I remember adding salt to bread dough, then sneaking it out of the bakery to make a handle for my shank. I remember when I cracked Dragos in the mouth in the clothing room for putting his hands on my homeboy Jay Groove. I remember the officers yelling, "Stop fighting," and spraying me with pepper spray as I whooped Dragos. I remember being tackled and cuffed and my face dripping with pepper spray. I remember coughing and sneezing with my nose running as I was being escorted to the hole. I remember everyone in the hole singing happy birthday loudly to cover up to the cries of that cat whose bad paperwork was exposed. I remember doing push-ups and burpees with my cellie in the hole for hours. I remember running a bingo game in the hole and gambling for envelopes, porn, and desserts. I remember when those white power cats who hate sex offenders found out that one of their own had bad paperwork that proved he was a sex offender. I remember when Jerry bombed Melissa, that pretty nurse, on the tier, and she cried openly right there in the hole. I remember when the officers came for Jerry, pepper spraying him while they beat him. I remember how good the warm sun felt on my face after doing my first 180-day hole tour. I remember going back to the hole many times for many reasons in those 9 long years. I don't remember becoming institutionalized.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. I always thought that that term institutionalized referred to people who like being in prison, preferred it there. That's what it always meant to me. And after going through this class in my own sort of inner revolution, I realized that I had become institutionalized from the way I respond to certain incidences or the way I think a person should act if someone says a particular thing or does a particular thing. Prison has its own belief system and codes of conduct and what you should do and what you shouldn't do and where you should sit and who you should sit with. And I bought into that, getting closer to the gate and going through this class and, like I said, other processes. I started to question my own belief system. And from that questioning, I realized that I was, and maybe to a certain extent still am, institutionalized.
Yeah, I don't think it's just something we bought into. I think it's something that we live. It ends up brainwashing you into a certain belief. And so you don't even realize that you're doing it. You don't even know that you're doing it because this is what you're supposed to do. This is how you survive. And so it's not until you take a class like this that you realize I'm vicious. And if I'm gonna act like this on the streets, I'll just be right back. And that's why people come back all the time, because they don't understand what they're doing. They don't realize that they're doing wrong. They might have, you know, some type of idea, but they really don't realize it. And so if you take a class like this where you're using creativity to express yourself and then you're discussing it with a group of people, and then they say, well, you know, actuality, that's too many cuss words, or you know what does this mean?
Yeah, often in the critique process, we would have to rewrite things so that the average reader could actually understand.
Part of that is I don't necessarily want them to change their language to be more socially acceptable. That's not my goal. My goal is to help them reach their audience and get their story told. So what I often will talk about is, you know, let's consider who the audience you want for this to be. Do you want to reach a wide audience? And if you do, you may either need to unpack some of these terms and sort of explain them a little bit, or you may need to think about your word choice. And when we make the books, we sell a certain percentage of them at Powell's and also at the IPRC, where I work, the Independent Publishing Resource Center. And when the guys release, they are, and if they can get to the IPRC, they get memberships to the IPRC and they get workshops, because our goal is to help them connect with a community and also to gain skills. Like, for example, Nathan has taken, brushed up on his design software skills, taking classes at the IPRC to do that, but just also to have access to the resources that we have there. So that's part of the program too, is to offer them those resources. Just a little bit of background about the IPRC. I'm the program director there. It stands for Independent Publishing Resource Center. Our website is www.iprc.org. We are a publishing resource center, so we have a screen printing studio, a letterpress studio, a book bindery, and also a computer lab that has the full Creative Suites programming. So it has Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, which is all software that enables one to lay out a publication. And then we also have writing classes, and we have a library. And we also have lots of events, literary events. We're going to be scheduling a reading in August with some of the CRCI guys who've released.
You use writing in everything. It's like reading. Reading and writing you use in everything. It's always a new food coming out that got a new name on it. It's always some type of letter print that you're going to use. And when you go down to the Independent Resource Center, when you go down there, they can help you do business cards. Like, mm-hmm. I started a business. I'm starting a business right now, Akia's Clothing, and one of the people went through and showed me how I can format my business cards, mm-hmm. which in return, when we get out, it'll help us save on money, and it'll also help us push for that dream that we want to have.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson with my guests Anne Marie O'Malley, Nathan McNair, Akias King, and Michael Dillon. We're talking about the Columbia River Correctional Institution's Creative Writing Program, and we're about to hear from Akias King as he reads one of his works.
This piece is entitled Grandmother. I remember you teaching me life lessons. I remember you telling me to always count my blessings. I remember your hair being long and jet black. I remember you kissing me and me saying, come on, mama, don't do that. I remember your skin being the color of caramel. I remember you lifting me up when I was full of anger and sorrow. I remember if I had a bad day, you would say things would be better tomorrow. I remember your shoulders always being mine to borrow. I remember your tender touch. I remember your hugs. They were warm, soft, and full of love. I remember your smile. Oh, how I wish I could see it now. I remember how you would always bake for you and I. Man, oh man, I remember homemade vanilla ice cream and pecan pie. I remember your unconditional love. I remember we both loved Daffy Duck. I remember of us laughing at goofy stuff. I remember you raising me by yourself. I know that had to be rough. I remember you teaching me how to be tough. I remember wanting to be like Michael Jordan, you encouraging me to follow my dream. I remember you telling me I could be anything I want to be. I remember you being my everything. I remember Disneyland, Six Flags, Oklahoma City, and us taking trips. I remember all the time we spent. I remember and I won't forget. I remember. So know you will constantly be missed. I will always remember our fun. Now the world will remember the life of my grandmother, Leslie Mae Patterson.
The piece that I'm going to read is called The Power of a Daydream, and it's based on something that actually took place in one of the classes, and I decided to write it out into a story. So it's a little bit emotional for me even to read it still. I read it last week to somebody, and I still choked up about it, even though I don't have to daydream anymore. Now I can actually spend time with my daughters.
Mike's got 8 daughters.
Wow. I have 7 biological and 1 that is sort of adopted.
Oh.
So. They're all wonderful, though. All right, so The Power of a Daydream. It's only late afternoon, but I feel as if I haven't slept in over 24 hours. There's only 2 months to go, but the days seem to be getting longer even as I get closer to going home. I can't stop thinking about getting back to the real world and spending time with my precious little girls who have never done anything to deserve being left all alone. The guilt is gnawing at me constantly. I'm becoming less a prisoner of the state and more a prisoner of my own mind. Which is worse? That's a good question, and here's my answer. Prisons of your own making tend not to have a release date. I need an escape. I walk to the sink and fill my plastic cup with water, then gather up my writing pad, reading glasses, and a pen. My writing class starts in a few minutes, and I don't want to be late. It gives me something to focus on, linking my sanity to the present moment. I look forward to it each week, a healthy goal and a step in the right direction. Just walking in the door to our classroom is somewhat of a relief. There are books lining three walls and a large whiteboard on the fourth. What is usually our sad little library now has several long tables set up in the center of the room to facilitate our meeting. It's no longer the same place I see every day. It's a different atmosphere entirely. Once a week, this is a safe haven for each of us and an outlet for our creativity. I find my seat and set up my things while everyone else files in. A few of us engage in casual conversation while we wait. Our instructor enters, shuts the door, and takes her place in the front of the room. Obviously, time for classes to begin. We all quiet down and give her our full attention. She spends a few minutes welcoming each of us and going over today's schedule. We will have three or four members of our group reading their work and opening up for comments and critiques, something I look forward to since it's both entertaining and constructive, keeping me fully engaged. However, we'll first take part in what we call a free write, a writing prompt consisting of only a few words and a 3-minute time limit in which to expand on it. It's a quick warm-up exercise, but I generally have a lot of fun with it. As she begins to write the prompt on the whiteboard, I look down and set the time on my watch to 3 minutes, then push the start button. When I look up, I hesitate. The prompt is, "I miss." Damn it all. What are the odds? The peace of mind I want just isn't in the cards today, is it? After this brief surge of frustration, I grudgingly decide to get on with it. I've already lost several seconds, so I'd better just get started and remain objective. So here goes nothing. I miss the feel of their small hands when they're holding mine. I miss the difficulty of deciding which of my 8 little girls gets to sit next to me when we watch movies together. I miss telling each of them in a whisper, "You're my favorite. Please don't tell your sisters, it would hurt their feelings." I don't miss fighting with their mother in front of them and seeing the hurt look in their eyes when they feel they need to take a side. I don't miss having to say goodbye. I definitely won't miss wondering when I'll finally see them again. This is everything I've been feeling summed up into 2 short paragraphs, everything I need to avoid, but it's too late for that now. I'm slipping back into that state of mind I both hate and love. I'm no longer in control. There are singular moments throughout my life that have been locked away in memory, imagery capable of surfacing without warning. The faces of my children when they're glowing with triumph and yearning for my approval, the tears of disappointment or expressions of pain they trust me to cure. I didn't choose these moments, they chose themselves. They seem to have their own life, their own will, often stronger than mine has ever been. I find myself living in the past, or at least in a world made of its remnants, a world willing to consume my sanity if I let it. Each time I visit, it gets that much harder to leave, and once again, I'm just there. I'm looking down into the eyes of my little angel, almost through them, in fact. There's a transparency I didn't expect, but it's definitely there. Something is very wrong, but there's too much that feels right. This is where I need to be, and it's where I wish I could stay. She's smiling up at me. It's a smile that reaches her eyes and into my heart to tug on its strings. I would do anything for her, anything she asks of me, whether it's within my power or not. Even as I look at her, she's changing. Her eyes and her smile are slightly different, but just as beautiful. Was her hair this color a few seconds ago? It's strange, there's a strong breeze, but it isn't disturbing her favorite blue dress. I guess it's not important as long as I have her here with me. Without warning, she lunges for me and wraps her little arms around my waist, pressing her face against my stomach. I can feel my shirt becoming damp with her tears as she asks where I've been, when I'm coming home, and why I left her all alone. She's warming my heart and tearing it all to pieces at the same time. It's a pain I wouldn't trade for anything. I place one hand on her head and the other around her shoulders, relishing the warmth and the feel of her silky hair. But it ends abruptly. Suddenly, my hands pass right through her. She's becoming less substantial with every passing second. My heart is racing, and she looks up at me. I can see my own fear reflected in her expression. "No, I won't leave them again," I scream silently. "Them?" Some semi-lucid part of my mind locks onto that word, but why? She's only one little girl, isn't she? I'm no longer sure of anything, and as I look back at her, I can see she is different than before. A little taller, a little older, and beginning to change yet again. I constantly shift in form. Each little girl as pretty as the one before, and all of them asking those same three questions. I have a burning need to hold each of them tight and show them it's going to be okay. But this was doomed from the beginning. The whole world seems to shake. It's all coming apart. I look to the suddenly graying sky, and drops of water splash on my face and run down my cheeks. At some point, it had begun to rain. When I look back to where she had been, there are only shadows of her essence remaining. Nothing but a memory. Maybe that's all it had ever been. Everything starts to tremble again, and I hear distant voices. They seem out of place, but are becoming more persistent. A constant nagging, attempting to drag me back to full awareness. I experience some disorientation as my eyes begin to focus on my surroundings. The table I'm sitting at shakes one final time. It's the person sitting next to me, tapping a stack of papers to straighten them out. I'm back in writing class, and it looks like someone's just finished reading their work. I'm hoping it was something sentimental so the moisture around my eyes isn't out of place. I guess it wasn't raining after all. I take a few seconds to compose myself and then raise my hand to ask what I'd missed. Maybe next week will be better. I took a lot from the class. I don't know, probably the most important thing that I took from it was a sense of, you know, just reestablishing some self-worth and giving some validity to my desires to be back into a normal lifestyle. I mean, it's kind of hard to put a name on it because you get really accustomed to prison life and you have to act in a certain way and you basically become more of a criminal the longer you're there. Mm. I mean, it's not there to correct you. It definitely teaches you everything you need to know to come straight back to prison, and it's hard to get out of that mentality. So a big part of what I took from the class was going into it and all of a sudden being treated like a person again and being called by name. The name of the book is really appropriate to what I'm trying to explain, from a number to a name, because you are a number in there, and that my number that I was